What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It is Candace, it is David, it is Isaac. Two of the three of the crew was in the FedEx Forum for the Game 5 win. Final score 116 for the Grizzlies, 99 for the Fakers. Isaac, Game 7, the Grizzlies take it to Game 7. All three of us going to be in the Forum at the same time.
Man, game seven, man. That would be awesome if they can get there. Yeah, man, I'm pulling for it, man. It would be a really good look, man, if they can go out to L.A. and the deck is going to be stacked against them. But like I said, I feel like they're the better team, and I still feel like they haven't played a complete peak game yet. I feel like if the Grizzlies play their best and the Lakers play their best, I believe the Grizzlies are the better team, and that's what gives me confidence going in tomorrow night. And as I've said time and time again, they're just due. I mean, they're 0-5 at Crypto Arena. If you count the loss to the Clippers and the four loss to the Lakers, they're like 0-16 as a road underdog this season. I mean, they're due for a regression to the mean game. And what better time than this one, man, to go out there, get a win, force game seven, get it back to 191 on Beal on Sunday. And I think if they get there, all bets are off, man. I give the Grizzlies a really good chance of pulling it out because they've only lost seven games on the home floor all year. So, man, that would be amazing, man. And I think they have a real good shot of it.
Yep, 100% agree with that. They got to play one really top-notch game. They got to play a complete game. You got to get more from Jaren. You got to get consistent Luke minutes. I'm sure we'll talk about that. I think coaching is going to be huge because it's really just about decision-making at this point. I think the Grizzlies have the talent and the recipe to beat the Lakers. And it's just a matter of if they're going to be willing to do that or not. But I agree. We've seen flashes. I think even in game five, there were flashes of them being a complete team, but not consistent. It's going to require that. And it's really interesting how this team went from last year being the king of underdogs and really pulling out a ton of, games that people didn't expect to having none. And like Isaac said, you hope there's an regression to the mean before the end of the season at some point. If now is the time to buck the trend, it's now. It's no better time to buck the trend than now. And they can do it, man. It's just a matter of, like I said, to me it's going to come down to coaching. I think you got to make some serious decisions and you got to play like your life's on the line. We'll see what that looks like from Taylor Jenkins. But teams got the talent to do it for sure. And, you could see LeBron was really tired. Now, part of it was I do believe he was conserving some energy. That was, a little bit of that was intentional, but you can also just see the series wearing on him too. I don't think he, as much as he's conserving energy, I don't think he meant to be as bad as he was in game five. And so I think you'll get a little bit more of a rejuvenized LeBron, but still, the longer the series goes, the more to the advantage of the Grizz, and that's something optimistic to look at.
I think when you look at, like, over my lifetime, when you look at fatigue, coaches and basketball people that I've been around, they're like, when you're watching a player and you want to know if they're truly tired, watch their jump shot late in the game and watch how much legs or how little legs they have in that jump shot. And when they have no legs in that jump shot, they're gassed. They've got nothing left. And there were multiple times in that game where I saw LeBron just look like there was nothing left in the tank. Now, I'm not sitting here acting like the game that he had at the Forum is what LeBron is going to be. Like, this is – I know one of the guys, I don't know who it was, he mentioned this is like one of the worst showings LeBron has ever had in a closeout game with, 15 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. So I'm not saying that is LeBron James, but he's 38 years old. He's got a lot of miles on his body. He only played 36 minutes in this game, and he was gassed. Going into game six, maybe he was conserving a little bit of energy, but he doesn't have a 40 or 45-minute game in him. And I think that gives, Anthony Davis was struggling getting up and down the floor late in this game. Those guys are effective. Those guys are great players. But if the Grizzlies go to LA and they execute their game plan and they're in this game late in the game, I think fatigue is going to play a factor in this game six.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. With the games being every other day now, I think that definitely favors the Grizzlies, because the Lakers, we talk about LeBron late in that game, and you could just tell, even in the second half, that he got extremely passive. He was just kind of handing the ball off to Austin Reeves and letting him run the offense. He was gassed. There's no question at the end of that game. And those guys had to leave there and go hop on a plane and fly all the way across country to L.A. And you got Anthony Davis, who was a little bit banged up with the hip. He has some stuff going on. He's always got some ailments. I really think that's advantage Grizzlies. And the Grizzlies were running those guys late in that game. And I think when they got up and down, man, they can't play that for a full, like you said, 48 minutes. And there's a report coming out that Anthony Davis has told Darvin Ham that he's willing to play a full 48 on tomorrow night. And I'm like, I'm all for
it. Dear Lord and baby Jesus,
if that's a close game and he plays 48 minutes, he's going to be gassed down the stretch. And that's definitely advantage Grizzlies if he's not out there doing his thing. So I'm all for that, man. If those guys want to play 48, 47 minutes, man, I'm all for it, because I feel like that's Grizzlies with their young legs. I think that's definitely an advantage. And I mean, they're going to need the big three to all be on point. We kind of saw that in game two, as far as John Morant and Desmond Bane. I mean, 64 points combined for those two guys, 20 rebounds from those two guys, which I think is huge and something that does need to be ignored. And that's one thing I've been really impressed with in this series, because I thought they'd get absolutely murdered on the boards going into the series, and that hasn't been the case at all. They've out-rebounded a couple games, and even when the games that they didn't out-rebound, like last night, they were only off by two. They only lost the rebound battle 54-52. And a lot of that has to do with gang rebound, team rebounding. And to get 20 rebounds out of your backcourt, that's huge. And you also, Jared threw in 10, that's 30. And off the bench, you had Aldama with 5 rebounds. You also had Luke Kennard with 5 rebounds. So you get 10 out of those two guys, that's 40 rebounds right there from 4 players, man. So that's the kind of effort that they need, because you can't let them beat you up on the boards, get extra possessions. And they actually tied them in offensive rebounds 14-14. So that's a big-time job, man, when you're going into this series thinking that you're on the size, you're starting X. To be able to hang with them on the boards is the reason why they've been able to stay in some of these games. And one big indicator in this game is, in both wins that the Grizz have had in game 2 and in game 5, they held the Lakers to under 100 points, 93 points in game 2, 99 points in game 5. So that's something to watch. Also, the team that won the first quarter has won every game in this series. So that's going to be important. I mean, you can't get out to the stars that they had in those first two games in L.A., man. You got to – because they're going to be – I think it's going to be very similar to what we saw in game 3. Crowd's going to be ready. The Lakers are going to come out and try to throw a big punch. There's going to be a lot of energy. You're going to have to match that. You can't – let this one get out of hand like you did in game 3. Yeah, because if you get behind an 8-ball, man, in this one, you already know the calls probably aren't going to go your way in this one. You can't get behind an 8-ball, man. It might be tough to come back in this one, because they're gonna try to pack you up early. But if you can weather that storm, man, and keep these guys running and keep them having to play LeBron and AD these big minutes, I think, again, that's advantage Grizzlies. And these guys have the right mindset. I mean, X and Desmond both, after that game, said that they're coming back to the Forum for a game 7 in front of the best fans in the world, man. They seem serious about it, man. So this is a business trip, but I think they have the right mindset, and I give them a great shot to do it, because this team has been through a lot. If there's any team that can go in there and win a game like this, despite their struggles this year, I think this is a team. You can never count these guys out, because they're going to fight. And yeah, man, they're just due. They're too good of a team to just continue to lose road games like that. It's so weird to have the best home record in the NBA and then struggle the way they are on the road. You just feel like at some point, just even by luck, man, that's going to change, man. And hopefully that's tomorrow night.
Yep. One thing we talked about when we first, and really before we even knew what the opponent, who the opponent was going to be for the playoffs, when we were having the conversation about who's your closer down the stretch, and particularly in the playoffs. And one thing I said was that most of the time, Jaren's your closer. But against the Lakers, that the Luke and Dez combination was going to be what you should be closing with. because they'd be able to space the floor better. Dez and Luke both can make the free throws that need to be made at the end of the games. And Dez had been a no-show up to the last couple games. Remember, he's had back-to-back 30-point
games. Man, just huge.
Huge games. And you're going to need that. You're going to need Dez to do it again, really. But, I mean, you could offset that with a little bit more from Jaren. I think Jaren can do better. I think how long – a lot of people – some people, I haven't seen a lot of it, but some people have been hard on Jaren and accusing him of being disengaged. I didn't get the chance to talk about this in a lot the last podcast because I saw some commentary about Jaren not looking engaged. And I'm not sure that the issue is Jaren not looking engaged because defensively he seems there, the effort seems there. He seems a little, you know, he struggles with AD.
It's AD, man. That's what it is.
Right. It's AD, and even when AD's not on the court, it's spacing, right? And we've talked about that over and over to the point where it's almost a dead horse, man. But I'm going to give Jaren some slack in that. If you space the floor a little bit better, you'll see better results from Jaren in terms of finishing at the rim. I really think you will because it makes everybody better. And we'll see if we see that adjustment made. But I think if you can get even just a little bit more from Jaren, that goes a long way. And I think that's one of the reasons why AD feels like he wants to play those 48 minutes is because he knows when he's off the court, you know, Jaren's more likely to be better. Ja's more likely to be better. So the team is more likely to be better. But like you said, if that's their strategy, fine. Because the fourth quarter is what's going to matter the most. They can just keep it a close game, like you guys said. So that's something to watch for. It really seems to be something that's coming into fruition is that the closers in this – the people you lean on in this particular matchup, it needs to be Dez and Kennard. And I hope that Ja recognizes that. We've seen a mixed bag from him in terms of how they're closing games. You've seen times where he has passed it out. And sometimes Dez just wasn't able to make the shot. I know that was the case in game five. Down the stretch, he got a few good looks, man, and just couldn't knock him down. I know he was tired at that point. And at other times he completely recklessly attacked the basket, and when he should have passed it to, you know, it was an outlet for him. Somebody was running the floor with him, and he definitely could have did something else, and he opted to like just do Jago get a bucket instead. So it'd be interesting to see what they do in this, you know, closeout game, and if Ja will be aware of the fact that, you know, they're going to pack the paint against them and just run it into AD. Probably not going to be your best game plan, man. It's just not. So that'll be a key to watch as well.
I was going to say real quickly, I was in a Lakers space earlier today, and they were talking about what worried them the most. And you saw this a little bit in game five, is the non-AD minutes for them. When he does go out of the game, Taylor Jenkins has been playing Ja when he's out of the game, and that's been a problem for them. Because when he's out of the game, Ja can – pretty much get anything he wants to. And we saw that in game five. And that's a counter that Taylor Jenkins did make. I'll give him credit when he does something that works. And I saw that in that game, and that works really well. So I think that's one reason why AD, like you said, is talking about possibly playing the entire game, because it's a problem for them when he goes off the floor. And especially if you're going to have Ja. And I would try to, if I'm Taylor Jenkins, whenever they have by the game, I'm going to try to line that up if you can and have Ja and Jared on the floor, because I think they can get going a little bit more when he's off the floor. One thing I've noticed in this series is that they're so afraid of AD, even when, like, on rebounds, even when they have a rebound, they're shaky. They're almost turn the ball over. Even when he's out of the game, it seems like they still feel like his presence is there. Like, that's how much of an impact that he has on the game. So that's going to be interesting to watch. But I saw it a lot in game five, and when he was out of the game, they usually kept Ja on the floor, man. He was really able to get downhill in those spots. So I don't believe AD's going to play 48 minutes. I'll believe that when I see it, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here hoping that he does.
But please do.
please do. Because I like that. He's probably, if he plays the first 36 minutes without rest, he's probably going to have 40 and 20 because he's been torching the Grizzlies. But when it comes closing time, that dude's going to be running with cinder blocks on the bottom of his leg.
And imagine if that happens and they win, and the Grizzlies win, and you had to go to fly to Memphis for a game seven, and he's played 48 minutes.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And that's I'm pretty happy with the way that, you know, I know Candace, you said that you've seen kind of a narrative of people are wanting more from Jaren, but he's averaging 19-9 in the series.
Yeah, I don't.
So some of that is inflated by the 31 points in the first game.
Yeah.
But even if you take that out, if you take that first game out, he's 18, 13, 14, and 18.
And the rebound and has been there.
Yeah, 9 rebounds, 5, which is not great, but 14 and 10.
Yeah.
Like you break that down, that's still pretty good numbers. And probably the most impressive part of what he's been doing, he's averaging 38 minutes a game.
Yes.
That was a concern that we had about is Jaren going to stay out of foul trouble. And it looks like, okay, I know that the maturation process does not happen overnight, but toward the end of the season, we saw some kind of dumb stuff from Jaren, and it's like, oh man, the fouls are kind of raring their head again. And then here we are in this series and he's staying on the floor. And that is at the beginning of this series, I was like, all the Grizzlies need Jaren to do in this series is play good defense and rebound the basketball. And I feel like he's doing that. I still think that that's the key. There are times, like, pick your spots. When AD is off the floor, they've got nobody that can guard him. And the only – they still have nobody that can guard him when AD's on the floor. But AD won't match up on him. AD just is able to be the help defender that is able to slow him down. So when Davis is off the floor, let Jaren be a little more aggressive. But I don't know, like, after that performance in game one, were you expecting more, like were you expecting Jaren to average 25-10 in this series? Is that what you're looking for? And I don't know. I know you were just kind of mentioning it.
Yeah, but I think it's the efficiency. It's the finishing. I think it's people a little frustrated when he's not able to finish over the top. But, again, I attribute that a lot to spacing. But it is, he's been inefficient in his
I was going to say, if there's any critique that I would have of him is the continued maturation process of passing out of double teams. That's the only kind of real critique that I would have for him in the series. But I think, I mean, just like we just got done talking about, just simply playing that amount of minutes. And, I mean, he's not even close to foul now. It's not like he's having four. Well, how many did he have last game?
Five. He had five last
He did
time,
have five? Well, oh, yeah.
He had four or five one other time. One other game.
Yeah, he had four in game.
Yeah, I think he had
three and four.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so, you know, I mean, like, that's remarkable. He had a flurry of them in the fourth, like when it got crazy.
Yeah.
But
that's pretty remarkable, man, because I'm saying he used to pick up silly fouls, and to be playing in a game at this level, this high level, going up against AD, and you got LeBron in there for him – to be able to stay on the floor like that, man. Who would have thought it? I mean, that was the biggest talking point coming into this series. I mean, when you heard Laker fans and national media talk about this series, like, oh, Jared's not going to be a factor because he can't stay on the floor. That has not even been close to the case. So I'm super proud of him, man, for maturing into that, because you would have thought for sure out of any series, this would probably be one where he would really struggle with that, man. And that has not been the case. And like you said, for him, the rebound numbers have been there. He had one that wasn't good, but all the rest of the games, he's been really good at it. He had 14 rebounds. What was that, game four? He had 14 rebounds. Yeah. I mean, that's a big-time number for him going up against AD. So I see a lot of people on him. It just seems like no matter what he does, it's never enough for people. I mean, you go out there and win DPOY. Not fouling out in the playoffs. He's had a 31-point game in this series, and even though he hasn't had the most efficient offensive game, he's out there battling, man. I don't have a lot of issues with him. I mean, you would like to see that scoring number tick up a little bit tomorrow night. I think they're going to need all three of those guys, Ja, Bane, and Tripp. If each one of those guys could get 20-plus, I think that's the kind of performance that you need. And I think if you could do that, I think that puts a lot of pressure on the Lakers to score enough points. Because if you get that kind of performance from those guys, just need a couple other guys to step up. You hope Luke Kennard is good to go. They had a stinger late in that game on a screen, hard screen set by LeBron James. When they were getting on the plane today, he didn't have anything on that arm. So I guess that's a pretty good sign. Taylor Jenkins, when he talked earlier today, seems to think that he'll probably be good to go. It is on his shooting side, so that's kind of concerning, but hopefully he'll be able to go. I think with a a game of this magnitude, if he can get out there and play, I think he'll be out there. But you're going to need at least one other guy, whether it's Tyus, whether it's David Roddy, Santi Aldama. You're going to need a pretty good performance from some of those other guys. They can't be a no-show like they've been some of these games. I thought Tyus was about to break out, came out and hit a three, was super aggressive, and then kind of went right back to his struggles after that. What was his numbers here?
It was 1 of 4 with
three. Well, 1 of 4 from three. Yeah. 1 of 4 from three.
He played good. He had a couple of turnovers, which is very uncharacteristic of Tyus. But, you know, he's a plus 12.
He's plus 12.
And that's why you need the bench to show up. And they haven't been. Rui Hachimura, Dennis Schroeder, every game, they have been showing up and producing. And
DeAndre Russell really got a good series, and that's not something that you expected coming in. We kind of joked about it, said he with us, and he has not been with us at all, because those shots that he hit in game four, man, that's the reason why they won that game. If he hadn't hit, you take one of those threes away and they lose that game. That those were big. What, he hit three in a row there before he fouled? And he should have fouled out before then. That's the thing that pisses me off when I look back on that game. There was a play where he should have fouled out on. They didn't call it. Then he hit those shots, and then he fouled out. Yep. So those were big shots. But I think you talk about that bench and how important it is. You look at Luke Kennard, plus 26, highest on the team. That lets you know how important he is to this team. I think he's paramount to this team's success. If he isn't even able to go, I know a lot of people wouldn't look at that as a big loss, but I think it's huge, especially when you see how the other guys have been performing off the bench.
Yeah, to go back to your point about Jaren real quickly, is one thing I talked about when we first started projecting him and previewing this series was I wasn't sure if he was going to be able to stay out of foul trouble or not, but I was sure he was going to be able to play through fouls. And even when he does get in foul trouble, like, for example, picking up some, and a couple of those were silly fouls down the stretch, but picking up some of those fouls in the end, he's still able to play the minutes. And that's pretty much what I figured. I figured you were still going to be able to get at least, I was projecting with, you know, he played averaged about 33 minutes, and he had 5 fouls in each of the games. So I'm like, you should be able to get 37, 38 minutes out of him, regardless, foul trouble or not. And he surpassed my expectations a little bit. But even when, like I said, the close calls, that's big, because we used to complain about that a lot. Taylor Jenkins not trusting him to play through the fouls, and then him not proving that Taylor Jenkins should trust him to play through the fouls. And so it's good to see on both ends that dynamic has worked out as well, because he got 5 fouls and Jenkins kept him in the game in the fourth quarter. He didn't take him out for 2 minutes and put him back in. He just let him play through it, which is exactly what you want to see. But to go back to your point about the bench, one thing that I think that Taylor Jenkins did differently was staggering those bench players a little bit. I'm not sure we saw as many all bench lineups, right? I'm not even sure we saw any all bench lineups last game. And if so, it wasn't for long. So that's going to be important too. I mean, even for Tyus, mix those guys in with some starters. Because they need that, right? You can't just bring in all bench guys, especially in those minutes where AD's not on the floor, because that's when Taylor Jenkins used to do it. Those are minutes that you have to take advantage of. So a lot of times, in game five, it was Jai on the floor with Santi, or, you know, sometimes even Jai and Tyus together. You saw that a lot more, and I hope that carries over. Because you got to win those minutes, man, and you're not going to win them with those all-bench lineups. So we want Tyus Jones to step up, but I don't think that you can count on him. You got a big enough sample size that, you know, he can help you a little, but that you need some other guys with him. I think Tyus misses Brandon a lot in terms of the bench. You know, I think he's still trying to navigate that a little bit. But you still would hope that Tyus would be able to at least give you something from three more than he is. But we'll see what they do, if Taylor Jenkins can make those those coaching adjustments and take him on a roll with him. That's a good question. But it was encouraging to see what we saw in the last game.
What did you guys think about Roddy over Conchar? I was kind of surprised. He kind of went different and didn't really play Roddy and played Conchar in those minutes. What did you guys think about that?
So somebody actually asked him, I think you got it backwards there, right? Because you say he played Conchar over Roddy. Did I hear that wrong? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, he did. He did. Roddy didn't play at all in game five. Yeah, he played Contra over Roddy. He had been playing Roddy and not Contra.
So he talked about Jitty's one-on-one defense being a little bit stronger and his ability to rebound the basketball. You know, he said he's not playing many minutes, but we know that he's going to go out there and he's going to play good one-on-one defense and he's going to rebound the basketball. And I think that's what he was looking for more than anything. Like shooting wise, I think it's fairly close whenever you're talking about those two guys. But I think it was, dang, I just lost his name. I know who asked him the question about it, but I can't think of his name right now for whatever
reason. Yeah, I heard it. I know the question. I heard it one day when he asked him. I think personally for me, I think I would play Roddy. I mean, Roddy is knocked down threes. Even though he's a rookie, I think with Taylor Jenkins, he probably feels like he can trust Contra a little bit more since he's more of a veteran guy. But, man, Roddy didn't – in his minutes that he played, he doesn't seem like it's been too big. The lights haven't been too bright for him, and I think – the physicality of him, I like it better. Kind of leaning on LeBron and some of those guys. I don't know, man. I think I trust him. I mean, it's only 10 minutes. Contra played 10 minutes, but in these playoff games, every minute is important. I mean, he wasn't like he was bad or anything out there. Just an observation, man. But I think for me, after what I'd seen the previous games, I think I would have stuck with Roddy. It was just kind of interesting that he kind of went completely away from that and made a completely different situation because I didn't see anything from Roddy that made you think, okay, well, maybe we need to set him and play somebody else.
Yeah, I agree with you, Isaac. I think I would go Roddy, too, if nothing else, because, again, shooting is really important in this game. And while Contra does not have the three-point shot this year. Hopefully, we can find it in the offseason, but it's almost a guaranteed brick at this point. His shot left in November, and it's been gone since, at least from three. But I did pull up the on-off numbers, and cleaning the glass, and it looks like David Roddy has the worst plus minus, but I think that's a little skewed because David Roddy didn't get the chance to play last game. So it's skewed for two reasons. One, because up until now, Jenkins has been putting in a lot of all-bench lineups that have been getting smoked. And so this was the game, again, that he staggered those starters with the bench players a little bit better, and I think that's why John Conchards isn't in the dirt. With David Roddy's, and because he didn't play him at all, he didn't have the opportunity to have that adjustment. I would have liked to see what that looked like prior to, but I don't have the option to filter that. At least I can't find the option to filter that prior to the last game. But yeah, for the same reason, for spacing, I think David Roddy's incapable of giving you rebounds. I don't think Contra is giving you, he's not the superstar rebounder that he was last year. I mean, he does okay, but he had three or ten minutes.
He's not the guy that people always, he's gonna come out there and get all these rebounds, he's gonna space the floor. Like, he hasn't been that this year.
I think David Roddy gets you one or two, like, and as has John Contar giving you one or two. I think that when you add the David Roddy has been able to hit the shots more than Contar, and so I just defer to that. And I think the physicality of Roddy bothers some of the other players. Now, sometimes he can kind of get some fouls and stuff because he's inexperienced, and I guess John Conchar wouldn't foul as much, but yeah, I'm not sure how much that matters.
I think he's more of a threat too for the defense. Like you said, I think he up the space and they're not worried about Conchar at all taking a shot. You have to at least be thinking about Roddy. I mean, if they watch the film, because he's knocked down a couple threes in games, you have to at least be a little bit concerned with him. They're not even paying attention to Roddy. Contrar.
Yeah, you gotta respect it a little, or you gotta consider respecting it, right? So that gives just a little bit more space than I think, because John Contrar had been able to prove anything in this series. And if I'm the Lakers, I'm not. Him and Dylan Brooks can just shoot as much as they want.
We got to touch on Dylan Brooks, man. I got some thoughts on that for sure.
But we'll definitely get there. Roddy's five for 17 in the series from three, so he's not shooting the lights out exactly. Like, I get what you're saying. I don't have
Kyle Charles. Well, he was 0-1. He was 0-1 from three, which I was, I mean, he had a big shot. It was wide open. They needed it. I was like, man, he's going to knock this down. Wasn't even close. It's like, damn, Kyle Charles. But he just hadn't been able to shoot the ball this year. I don't know what happened to his shot. But one thing I do want to mention, I can't believe David hadn't mentioned this, something that's been a struggle all year for this team. They've been excellent from the free throw line in the series. Game one, 94%. Not so great game two at 76%, but 90%. Game three, 86%. Game four, at 82%. Game five, and we kind of talked about that possibly being a problem in the playoffs. It has not. I mean, they've been really good. John's been really good from the free throw line. All the guys really have, and that's a big plus. That's something that I think is kind of flown on the radar. When they've had opportunities to get to the line, they've knocked them down.
I got you, David. John Kerr has not made a single three.
Yeah.
I didn't think so.
Three attempts.
Single one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I take five over the
one. Yeah.
Yeah, but Jitty has 14 attempts left before he gets to the
second.
Yeah,
he's going to try. He's going to throw that out there. But still, I just think the space.
I agree with you guys in the fact that I would prefer Roddy over Conchar, but I don't know. Like, if I'm the Lakers, if I'm Darvin Ham and David Roddy is wide open from three, I'm not pissed if he's shooting. Like,
he did block AD twice at the rim. So I guess he earned those little minutes the other night.
Yeah, I guarantee it, dude. That's my favorite part of the playoffs. So
you earned them 10 minutes, man.
Yeah. That's I'm going to get a big poster. Like, I'm going to have a mural of that block.
Yeah, that was nasty, man.
But, you know, it's if Kennard cannot go, I saw, did you guys see DeMichael Cole was talking about it? He said that he talked to Taylor Jenkins about if Kennard is a no-go, what's it going to look like? And he mentioned Conchar and Tyus Jones.
And
he also mentioned Zaire Williams. And listen,
no confidence at all. Loves it's terrifying to hear.
Like, man, all that guy, here, man.
Like, all that's gonna do for you is give you a defender that's long.
Got that length out there, man.
It sure as hell ain't gonna give you no spacing, bro. It ain't giving you no spacing.
Man, coming out there going 4-5 and three, man.
As far as they're sagging off of Dylan Brooks in this series, they will not even look. You could park Z in the corner. There's not going to be anybody within 30 feet of that.
At this point, I think I'd rather Zaire Williams shoot corner threes than Dylan Brooks. Shoot threes. Probably anybody in the world, maybe, at this point.
I got to agree. I hate to say that, but I got to agree.
That's how bad it's been.
I don't like seeing him shoot threes. I really don't want him on the court because I just have that image of Paul George just fouling him out basically in like 2 minutes. I have that ingrained in my head. I'm just worried that he'll look like a deer in headlights out there, man. But that is not encouraging to me, especially that he didn't mention Roddy. Because of those players, Roddy's only hit five. So I'm not saying that he's a great three-point shooter. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he's been better this series than all three of those guys he named from three.
That's why I was surprised that he said Zaire and didn't say Roddy. I was like, Roddy in the doghouse or something? Like, what's happening, man? Because when you name the next guy, and I was like, he named Zaire. I'm like, that's interesting.
Yeah, that would be a disaster for you to roll out the guy you haven't played all series just in an elimination game. You're just going to try him out there. Boy,
Zaire getting 15 minutes tomorrow night.
Y'all going to have to give me 15 minutes just to rant about Taylor Jenkins if he does that. Just going to be honest.
So I want to talk about Jenkins, and I want to talk about the adjustments and some of the stuff that I have said on the podcast, and kind of where we were all pretty much universal in it. So the in-between game adjustments, there's no doubt in my mind that Taylor Jenkins is sharp and he can go and he can watch film and he can make adjustments game to game. Do we see them very often? No. Not really. We saw them in game five. You had to see something different in game five than what you've been seeing. The biggest thing for me, the biggest thing that scares me about him is his inability to make in-game adjustments.
Yep.
I don't know if it is fear. I don't know if he's worried about messing up the psyche. I don't know what the hell it is.
Bootnoser.
But please, for the love of God, somebody make sense of why in the hell Luke Kennard, like, yeah, the shoulder injury, fine. Before last night's game, Luke Kennard has been a massive positive for this team anytime that he's been on the floor. Man,
take me back to game four.
And Dylan Brooks he's a negative four in this series. Negative four is not a big number, but Dylan Brooks has been flat out bad. And I had a big ass, like 40,000 square foot mansion on Dylan Brooks Island. That's my guy, but he's just been bad. You bench. Like Carl Anthony Towns was barbecue chicken Steven Adams last season, and he did not hesitate to send his ass to the bench. But it's like Dylan Brooks has got some sort of blackmail voodoo. Like why? And we were talking about it post game last night. If Luke doesn't get injured, does Dylan come back in that game? And the answer to that question is 1,000% yes. There's zero chance that Taylor Jenkins leaves him on the bench for the rest of the game.
And people give
even
him
though
credit
the
for
Grizzlies
that too.
Are cooking the hell out of him, are the Grizzlies are cooking the hell out of the Lakers without him on the floor. You look at the score of the game when Dylan Brooks went to the bench was 75-74. And then the Grizzlies went on like a 24-0 run.
Happened twice.
He goes to the bench.
Yep.
Like, you are, man, never mind. I ain't wasting breath on it anymore, bro. You're getting paid to do this shit. If you can watch film and make those adjustments, you should be able to watch the game in real time and see what the hell is not working. And if you're not seeing it, somebody else on that coaching staff should be in your ear. Hey, this dude is on his knees out there blowing the game. Get him out.
It ain't gonna happen, man. It's just
glad to hear you say that.
Yeah. I mean, you look at who his mentor is. I mean, if you watch the end of that Milwaukee Miami game into overtime, just malpractice by Boonoser in that game, and you see some of the same stuff. And I've talked to some Laker fans. And some of the same critiques that we have of Taylor Jenkins, they have the same ones about Darvin Ham, about not making adjustments, rotation issues. It's just that Boonoser tree, man. They're known for guys that they don't make in-game adjustments. They just got to stick with whatever their idea of how a basketball game should be played. They just stick with that. It doesn't matter what's going on in the game. And, I mean, it's one thing to do that in the regular season, but to continue that into the postseason and, I mean, how the magnitude of these games and just continue to do the same thing. It's just, it's idiocy. Like, I don't know. I don't understand. It's doing the same thing over and over, man. You're going to get the same results. That's just what's going to happen. And you look at this. I mean, Dylan Brooks was a -7 in this game, in a game that they won by 17 points. Everybody else is a plus in this game except John Conchar and Dylan Brooks that played -7, and he played 30 minutes. I mean, that – and you got Luke Kennard's +26, highest on the team in, how many, 18 minutes. I mean, that's all you need to look at. This is a time where plus minus tells the complete story. And with Dylan, I just, at this point, I've always been in between. I've never been Dylan hater. I wouldn't necessarily say I was on DB Island either. But the last game, game five, just was a straw that broke the camel's back, man, because it's just the same stuff over and over. The only thing that Dylan has to do, use him as a screener, 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 get to the dribble pull-up mid-range, slash, and play defense. If he did that, he would be a tremendous asset for this team. But he just continues to shoot the basketball. I don't know if I've ever seen a guy that misses as many shots as he does but continues to take them. But you got to go – it has to go back to Taylor Jenkins because he allows it to happen. So he's not innocent of this either. So both of those guys are at fault. And I just don't know – what's wrong with Dylan? Because at some point, I would just stop shooting if I was him. I would just stop shooting. If I can't make any shots, I'm not going to continue to go out there and pull off a three, even if I'm wide open, man. Get to the mid-range. It's there. It's there all the time, man. And he can just dribble because they're not guarding it. And it puts such a strain on the offense because you saw in the game, they were doubling Ja, they were doubling Bane when he was in the game, and it just put such a strain on the offense. And you put, I mean, you remember that, what was that at the end of that first quarter, the play where Kennard, or the second quarter going to halftime, where Kennard hit that three. I mean, just some of the best spacing I've seen all year. How do you watch that and then go back to what you saw in the third and fourth quarter in this game? I just don't get it. And a lot of people were giving Jenkins credit. I was like, the only reason why that happened because Kennard got hurt. Like, it wasn't like he made some big adjustment. And he's going to go right back to it tomorrow night. And if I'm him, if Kennard's healthy, and I said this a couple games ago, I would start Kennard and bring Dylan off the bench. It's never going to happen, but that's what should happen. Start off with your depth lineup, or whatever you want to call it. We saw a couple times in that game where he went to four-guard lineups, one time in the first half, one time in the second half, and I loved it. I mean, that's the best spacing that they had.
If you want to gas AD, you have to do that. You need to run that lineup because
– start off from the beginning, man. I'm
going to get on a small soapbox right here and talk about a three-second call that was called late in the game on Jaren. Go back and watch the film. I started watching this in the second half. Anthony Davis
– every damn play.
His motherfucking –
every damn play. LeBron, every too. Play.
Sorry. Every like, play. He parks – in the paint.
Yep.
And they never call it.
Never call it.
And now, listen, I know that sometimes he does what he needs to do, but there is so many times that they can call a defensive 3 seconds in the key on him, and they don't do it. And the only time that they chose to make that call last night was it was on the offensive end. It was on Jaren. And I'm like, why? Why are you calling that now? Anthony Davis – At the end of the was it the end of the third that Ja got downhill, like he crossed up Schroeder and made the layup?
I think the like, I want to say that
like
was
it was either the second or the third. Ja, like there's 17 seconds on the clock. Anthony Davis is in the paint the entire time.
Yeah, the entire
with
time.
Nobody around.
Nobody close.
And they don't call it. Yeah. Nothing. And it drives me crazy. Like, it made me cuss on here. I don't ever use that word on here, so I apologize. But like, it's insane to me, like how when they choose to actually pay attention to that stuff. Didn't mean to interrupt your point.
I was gonna say, yeah, man, you completely. I mean, it was going on all series. LeBron too. There have been times where LeBron has been in there just parked, and not moving. It's crazy, man. How they decide to make certain calls. Like you said, it's been going on all game, and then you decide to call that on Jaren. It's, man, I don't know, man. I'm not even going to get into that. How officiating, now it's different, how they make certain calls at certain times and then switch up and make another call on a certain team, and you can go back and look. The people on the other team have been doing the same thing all game, and they've never called it. It's wild, man. It's wild.
Yeah. I wanted to go back.
Yeah, we were talking about DB, and – You look at his performance in this series, 2 for 9, 2 for 6, 1 for 5, 1 for 7, 2 for 10. It's at 22%, 21.6% from three.
Man.
They're just sagging off of him. His strong suit over the course of his career has been the mid-range jumper. As far as they're sagging off of him, why does he not dribble penetrate?
Every time he's wide open right there for him.
Yeah. Like, just dribble penetrate. Dribble penetrate and look for your teammates. Your shots aren't falling. Become a playmaker. There was early, we talk about adjustments, and one of the things that we talked about is like when they were coming down the floor and the shot clock was running down, that Dylan seems to find himself on that right wing a lot. And early in the game, they had Dylan parked in the corner. And I'm like, Taylor's listening to the podcast. He moved Dylan out of that spot. And then as the game progressed, that kind of changed. And he went back to that right wing. And I was like, I was hoping that was adjustment that they made, but they didn't. I just, there are so many things that he could do that it's better with the ball than to just chuck up the three.
I mean, this man be actually calling for the basketball. It's what really pisses me off. He calls for the basketball at times. I'm like, man, come on, man.
And Ja feeds him. And
every
and,
time.
And in lieu of Luke Kennard all the time. Bane is one of the only ones I've seen him just look off Dylan. But, I mean, everybody gives it to him. But
Ja's comments after the game said that they talking about how important Luke Kennard was. That's what Ja said after the game.
Right. The audacity. the audacity was where I read that. And I said, wow, that's bold. So what's funny is to me, I know we talked a lot about D'Lo and him being with us, man, but Dylan Brooks with them, like, it's just that bad. It's getting to the point where it's unavoidable because he's not playing good defense. I know everybody says, just play your role, but they've moved him off of it. If you pay attention, a lot of those, as the series has progressed, they move X on LeBron more, which they should do because X is the best defender on LeBron right now. And they move Jaren more on AD. And sometimes Dylan will take AD because for whatever reason, that's been a thing now.
Yeah, they kept getting him.
I'll tell you why that works. The DB plays physical, and Anthony Davis can't handle that.
Yeah, he did a pretty good job on him sometimes, like, where he got switched on him. He did a really, really pretty good job of stopping him at the rim.
He had him at 1-9, but it changed last game. Anthony Davis was 6-18 now with Dylan Brooks guarding him. So he got some shots off, but it was still one of his best defensive jobs, Dylan Brooks on everybody.
Because AD is really soft. Like, people look at him like he's this big physical presence, and he is when he gets going. But if you body him up and put hands on him, he doesn't like that. He doesn't like that at all.
But they even kind of took him off of AD. So they had him on Reeves more often in game 5. And so if he's not adding value on defense,
he's almost unplayable. He's not
adding value on, because Reeves is tearing him up because he's just going to get a foul. Like, I mean, if you breathe on Reeves anyway, he's going to get a foul.
Yeah, he was cooking him.
Sloppy you. But yeah, I mean, Reeves is eating him up all series anyway. So again, if you're not adding the defensive value and you're a complete liability to the point of that is an advantage for the other team to have you on the court. I mean, at this point, they would give Dylan the MVP if they it's really that bad. And I saw a quote that just made me almost cry. Dylan was asked about what does he do when his shot's not going, you know, how does he get in the rhythm? Essentially, I think it was Tim McMahon who asked him the question. Dylan's response was to just keep shooting.
He said, game coming, man. It's coming. One of these games, he said.
One of these games is if there's it's not an
like he got 100 games left.
If there's only one game left, you have to win this game in order to make it another game. And so it, my response was, he's becoming a terrorist. Because at that point, it's really bad, man.
Yeah, offensive terrorist. He's an OT, and I ain't talking about offensive terrorist.
And I too, going into the season like Isaac, was pretty neutral. Like if he did great, I give him props, right? Like I was never one of the people that felt like Dylan brings no value, because I disagree with that. I think he brought great value, and in most series he's able to stop the best player. This just is not his series, and that's fine. If they were to get past this series and play the Warriors, he'd be needed 100%. But also know, you got to play the best players, man. And Taylor Jenkins is what frustrates me the most about the DB situation. Not just that he won't start Luke, because DB is really not really, he's not under contract right now. So I'm not sure why you feel the need to play K. But I guess let's assume that as a coach, you're assuming he'll be back. There's a solution to this, and that's just make Luke the first man off the bench and close with Luke. Because that's not the Taylor Jenkins used to do that. I mean, he used to just go with the best 5. And so sometimes, now generally Dylan was in that best 5, but not all the time. Every now and then you see him not, you know, it was rare. But again, it's something that's a precedent. So in the playoffs, like, hey, Dylan, fine. You want to start him? Start him. Bring Luke out early. And when you close games, bring him out too. Now, I don't think Dylan needs to really play at all, but I get you got to give your guys a rest. You can play him against the bench lineups. He'll probably do all right in that. But that's the best adjustment that I think Taylor Jenkins could make realistically, right? Like, we know he's not going to start Luke. But if he did that, at least close. And if you didn't do anything else, you got to close with Luke. You just have to, because Ja can't do anything if he's being doubled every single play, or bang, because that happened.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happening. Like, whoever, when Dylan is on the floor, whoever is his assigned defender is essentially double teaming either
Bane or Ja.
Whoever has the ball, that they're getting the double team, and that's playing into what the Lakers want to do. I would love to not get a coach speak answer and somebody be like, why?
I know what it is.
Why do you have the stones to bench Steven Adams, but you will not bench Dylan Brooks? I know.
He's placating. That's exactly what he's doing. The only explanation for it. There's no basketball explanation that he can give that makes any sense, because anybody, a remedial level basketball watcher, would understand that that's a problem. Like, there's no question. He's too smart to watch this and say, yeah, this is fine. Like, I can't see that. If he does, he doesn't need to be coaching. Like, he needs to be out of here. He can't, if he really thinks that's okay, what we're seeing out here, he needs to be out of here yesterday. Like, I don't want him as my coach. So we'll see, but it's got to be, he's scared to hurt his feelings. That has to be what it is. I guess he's the culture guy on his team, supposedly, and he's been here the longest, and Ja loves him. The guys like him, and he just doesn't want to upset him. That's the only explanation I have for it.
And it might be more about Ja, because Ja does love him. That's a good point.
Yeah, he loves him. That's his guy.
It might be not one to upset about Ja. That. Yeah.
Bro, but Ja has a basketball IQ. These guys talk all the time about wanting to win. And sometimes you just have to realize that you're not the best option whenever it comes to winning. And right now that's not, this pains me to have this conversation, because I know that Brooks can bring value to this team. It hasn't happened in this series at any level, but I know that he can do that. We have watched him do that. The Utah performance, the efficient, that is like, that's bubble Jamal Murray. That's what that is. It happened one time and it's never happening again. I don't expect that version of Dylan Brooks to just show up one day. I've seen enough from him. There's plenty of tape to know that the version of Dylan Brooks that is Dylan Brooks is closer to what we're seeing right now than what we saw in that series against Utah. It's
the hair, man.
Yeah,
I said that earlier in the season.
You can't.
No, it's not the hair. I think when he broke his wrist, he changed. I mean, his shooting form was never consistent, but I think him breaking his wrist.
Yeah, if you watch his shooting form, it's bad. Like, the way he holds the basketball. I was watching some film the other day, and watching him, I think, shooting around before the game, and he has a weird form on his shot. I think that's definitely part of the problem. He needs some work on his shooting form, for sure.
His shooting form has regressed since.
Yeah, it had gotten better, and it's bad. Like, I was watching him, I think, shoot free throws, and it was the way he holds the basketball. It ain't good, man. It ain't pretty.
Yeah, but just, and this will be my final point on it, but Coach Jenkins has talked about the maturity of the team. He has mentioned that. And I think you kind of see some of that play on the court, particularly with Ja, because I know, like you said, he has basketball IQ. I don't think it's about basketball IQ. I think he looks off Luke because that's not his guy. And he wants DB to make sure. I think it's almost like sending a statement, right? The way he passes the ball to Dylan, I think it has to be a statement at this point. He likes Luke on the floor for the purpose of him
getting some spacing.
Yeah, but he does not. He would rather give DB an opportunity. It's almost high school cliquish stuff, right? Like, I'm in with you, so I'm going to feed you the ball because you're my guy. I think it's more that.
Yeah, and he knows that. He reads all this stuff, and they hear all this stuff about Dylan and his struggles, and he wants to get his guy going. Like, I'm going to get you shots, man. And I definitely think that's a part of it. I think Ja has a lot to do with, because you don't want to piss him off. I think Taylor Jenkins thinks that if he takes him out the floor, he's going to piss Ja off.
It probably will. I think it's legitimate. That's legitimately a thing. I think Ja would be pissed, but Ja will be all right. I mean, enabling Ja is the last thing this team needs.
Yeah, I'm just trying to win. Like I said, this is not about enabling or placating to a guy's feelings. You're going out there trying to win basketball. That's your job as a coach, man. I get it. And Ja'll be fine, though. If they win games, I think Ja'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they all will. And that's what, you know, as volatile as Dylan could be. And I know that there was some friction, like going back to the stuff with JB and him playing. Man, I can't remember the dude's name. Who were they starting over him?
Gary Temple.
Yeah. Like starting Temple over Brooks. Like, I know that there was some stuff that kind of went down there. But, man, if Steven Adams can suck up his pride and support the team, you should be able to do the same thing. Just period. Like, there is not a player on this team. Tillman has been fantastic, but there is not a player on this team that you can make an argument for as a better starting center than Steven Adams. And he was getting cooked. So when he got sent to the bench, that's what he done. He was still up cheering, rooting on his guys, being a teammate. And I'm not even going to say if, I know it's not happening, but if it were to happen, you should be the same way. It should be more of the same and not this, oh, poor pitiful me. Like, you're trying to win a playoff series.
Yeah, at some point you got to have self-awareness. Like, he knows that he's struggling. Like, you looking at these numbers, at some point you got to say, well, this might not be best for the team. I'm willing to go off the bench. I'm going to be a good teammate. That's what you should do, just like you talked about with Steven Adams. He realized that he was struggling, getting cooked. They put him to the bench, and he's the biggest cheerleader on the team. Like, didn't seem to be pissed off or anything, because he knew it was best for the team, and if they were winning games, he's happy. And that's the same thing I would expect out of Dylan. But if it happens, that's not the same thing you're going to get out of Dylan, because he's just a different kind of guy than Steven Adams. But you got to have some self-awareness at some point. And that's the thing that I don't understand. I just don't understand a guy missing shots as bad as he does, just continues to take them every time. I mean, he's looking for shots. He's coming out on fast break, pulling up from three, and you know you're not making these shots. I just don't get it. It's just like it's something in his head ain't right. Like, he ain't wired right. I don't know, man. It's just weird. And again, that's part of that's on him, but a lot of it's on Taylor Jenkins, as I said earlier, to allow him to continue to do that.
Unshakable confidence badge is Hall of Fame.
Man, green light in that man's head, man.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about X. You know, he's done a great job in the series, but the fan disdain for Dylan Brooks and what he's been doing really overshadowed the fact that X smoked a lot of shots at the rim last night. I was sitting there watching. And when he would get downhill and he would miss, he would, like, little 4 foot bunny just kind of, I don't know, like, lost his touch. And he made a couple late in the game and kind of redeemed himself a little bit. But there was a stretch there. Anytime that X would get the ball, I'm like, well, here comes another miss at the rim. Did you guys catch any of that during the game? Like, him just being awful finishing?
I think it's the AD effect. Like I said earlier, I think even when AD's not in the game, it just seems like even on rebounds, like when they clear the rebound, they're fumbling the ball. It just seems like they're spooked at the rim. And I think a lot of that has to do with that. I mean, they've gotten shots blocked, and I think they're just kind of having yips on some of those shots. I think they rush them a little bit, and I think that's what you saw. He eventually settled in, but he had, I mean, several in that first half, that point blank. Like three or four foot shots that he just missed, and there was just no reason for it. And again, I just think I've seen multiple guys do it. It's not just X. There were a lot of bunnies missed. Tyus Jones has missed some on those floaters. I just think they're kind of scared to go in there. They've had so many shots blocked by AD. I think they worry about that, and it's in the back of their mind anytime they get an easy shot like that.
Yeah, it seemed like he fumbled the ball a lot. Like he's only credited with one turnover, but it just seems like when he would get the ball, he would just kind of fumble with it. And maybe we ended up like recovering it. So that's why he's not credited with a lot of turnovers. But that happened a few times too. I'm just like, he just looks so, even catching the ball, he looks so uncomfortable tonight. And so that was a big factor. Like you said, I think he started, eventually he just started dunking it just to so you wouldn't have to worry about smoking the layup, which I think is a good decision. I hope that because he had a bad game and a game we won, you know, because he's sort of been an up and down. I think you've seen some of the best of Tillman in this series, and I think you've seen some of the reason why he was a third string center in the series. And so my hope is he could be on the upswing kind of when they needed the most. And I think that's possible for sure, because I'm sure he's not happy with the way he played. And what I've seen, his interviews, he's not satisfied. I'm sure he'll make the proper adjustments to do better in game six. So I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, I have a hard time. I have a hard time being negative about him at all, because like you said, this was a guy that was your fourth big. I mean, coming into the season, they were telling him that he wasn't even going to be in a rotation at all. He volunteered to go down to the G League. So for him to be starting and playing major minutes, I mean, even in this game, we're saying it's a down game, but you're talking about a guy that was your fourth big, had 8.6 rebounds, 4 assists, still efficient, 4-10 from the floor, 31 minutes plus 11. I mean, that's a pretty good job going up against AD. I can really can't complain about him. He did miss some bunnies, but I think he's done a yeoman's job for what you could expect for a guy like that playing in this series going up against AD. So, I mean, shout out to him, man. I think he's done. I think he's been really good.
Yeah, no doubt. And like when Candace mentioned that, you know, he started dunking it so he wouldn't smoke it. And like my mind went to the scene in Anger Management. The dude that's listening to the basketball game, he's got the one wide headphone in, and he starts like grunting, like, "You gotta talk that shit." And that's what I felt like up there when he kept smoking those layups. I'm like, why not just dunk it? Why not just dunk the ball? Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm still in third grade sometimes. You'll have to excuse me. So, game six tomorrow night in Los Angeles, where we've talked about it. The Grizzlies have been just awful. And it's funny, Taylor Jenkins referred to it in his post-game presser. I want to find the quote because it was, I kind of laughed a little bit when he said it. Sorry, I'm reading the notes here. So if you guys want to fill in for me, you can. But he was talking about how they haven't won on the road.
Yeah, like Isaac said, man, you got to hope for a regression to the mean. That's what you got to hope for. I mean, really, considering that this team did a really good job on the road last year. They really did. That was kind of their thing is – I talked about it, you know, good teams went at home, great teams went on the road, and they just made a complete 180, man. And it's not that they don't have the talent, man, because a lot of the players are still on the team, and they've all grown in various ways, development-wise. And so I think it's a head thing. I do think that it's, kind of speaks to the – you know, this team didn't used to be an immature team. They used to be a confident team, but they didn't really used to be an immature team. But I don't know what shifted. I think
just a lot of the outside stuff, the outside noise, the job situation happened. And then this narrative has come out there about them. And I think they hear this stuff. And I think that worries them. I think they care about. They try to pretend like they don't, but I think they care about a lot of the stuff that the national media is saying about them. And I think it's gotten their head a little bit. And I think it's just a lot of that, the outside noise that they're hearing. And they're trying to, I guess, try to not be what people are saying they are. And I just think it got in their head this year, because like you said, this used to be a poise. That's one thing that you could say about this team, poise, confident. When they said something, the 90% of the time they back it up.
Yep.
And that just hasn't been the case this year. They've talked a lot and come up small. Like you go back to that Christmas game against Golden State, which that game still pisses me off to this day. All summer you're talking about that game and just came up super small. I mean, Golden State had guys out that game and just came out and got the doors blown off. And that kind of, I think, started kind of the spiral of some of this stuff that we're talking about this season. That I think that was the moment where some of the stuff kind of went the wrong way after that game. But it's time for them to take care of business, man. And like you said, your season's on the line, man. Go out there and change this trend of losing on the road. And because you have the talent. This, to me, like I've said, and the reason why I'm confident, and I've said this time and time again, is because even without Steven Adams and Brandon Clark, I feel like the Grizzlies are the better team. And I've said that on Twitter, and I've had Laker fans in my mention laughing, like, you down 3-1, ha, you going to say we're the better team. If you look at these games, I mean, game one, even though you look at that final score, it looked like the Lakers blew them out. That was like a one-point game with like 3:50 to go in that game. They just kind of ran off, had about 4 or 5 possessions in a row where they just got run outs at the end of the game when it was over, and they ended up getting dunks and layups, kind of inflated that score. You have an overtime game in game four. This could easily be 3-2 Grizzlies, or even be over 4-1 Grizzlies if some of those things bounced the other way. So even though they were up 3-1, they really had dominated in the series the way that would sound. So if the Grizzlies put together a full 48-minute game and play, have a peak performance versus the Lakers' peak performance, I think the Grizzlies win. And that's why I feel like they have a chance. Doesn't mean they're going to go out and do it, but they definitely can. It's not like you have a 3, because you look at the numbers and how many teams have come back from 3-1. Reason why that is, usually if you're down 3-1, that means that team is a lot better than you. And I don't feel like that's the case here. I just feel like the Grizzlies had some self-inflicted stuff that have happened and haven't had a complete game. And if they do that, they're the better team. And I think they can win this game. And again, come back for game 7. Crowd's going to be crazy. Like I said, they haven't lost but 7 games at FedEx Forum all year. I give them a really good chance of winning that game, man, if they can get it back here. So it's one game at a time. You won the first one, game 5. Got to go on the road and change that trend and get your biggest win of the season. And I think they're capable of doing it.
Yeah. I'll get back to David. I just wanted to your point about the maturity. I guess my main question is, I understand that the noise is getting in their heads, but a lot of that was immature decisions leading up to the noise. So
yeah, for sure.
That's why I say I wonder what shifted, because, I mean, there wouldn't be as much noise if it wasn't for the immature decisions that led up to the noise. So that's what I wonder what changed, and that's probably a rhetorical question. Nobody's really going to have to answer today.
I was going to say, I hate to get back into this, but I wonder behind the scenes how much of the Josh situation, how long had that been going on? Had that been something that was bubbling under the surface and we just didn't know about it? That's the question that I have. Maybe they had some stuff going on and just were kind of hiding and we didn't know that had been something they were dealing with. Because you talk about the Steven Adams team meeting. If he called a team meeting, that probably means that they had been having some issues with this before, so maybe that played into it. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Back to you, David. I know you.
I was trying to find that post game quote from Jenkins, but they definitely left some of it out whenever they typed it out. So I won't read what he said. Well, one thing you mentioned, kind of them hearing the national media. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's the national media so much as it is the local media. You know, Giannotto wrote that. Wrote that article, and then one of Ja's responses.
Yeah, he clapped back at it.
Yeah, quoting exactly what he said
in
the article. You know, I've got to be more mature and live up to this pedestal that people have me on. And like I understand, as we talked about, Giannotto was one of the guys that made comment about him not taking questions, and Jeff was another guy, and we're like, you know, that feels like that he doesn't owe you anything. But as somebody that's your job, you're going to have to write tough stories. Sometimes you're going to have to be critical of these guys. So it's, you're in a tough spot. If you're just the yes man, you're not doing your job. And I don't know, like, this is not me like tossing out support to Giannotto. I don't know him. I've read some of his work. Some of it's good. I'm sure that he does a great job. So it's not a, you know, hooray for him or a bashing him. But I just thought, I feel like when the national media says it, it's like they're not watching this. They don't know. But when the local guys say something, then that's when you really see them clap back about it.
Yeah, I'll push back a little bit, because their road issues have been an issue all season. And Giannotto wasn't writing articles back in October or December. So I'm not sure that it's just that. I know that they do pay attention to both. Because, I mean, the whole Skip, and Josh made several references to Skip Bayless. So it's both for sure. But maybe it hurts more with the local media. You might be right about that part. But they hadn't got a lot of local media pushback until some of the issues did start showing up. I mean, really, I think before the end, everybody was pretty supportive.
And I'm going to say, I think personnel personally played a part in it as well. I think people undersold losing veteran guys in Kyle and Melt. People say it didn't have an impact. I think it had an impact, especially early. I mean, they got out to a good start. Like, I think a lot of the rookies, when you talk about LaRavia, those guys really started off those first few games like it was going to be fantastic. And then they kind of regressed to the mean off the bench a little bit as the season went on. I think being younger on the bench, I think also played into it as well. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, I would agree. I definitely agree with that. And I think for Ja, I think the Melt thing in particular, I think that they were really good friends. And it may be why he looks off Luke Kennard so much. I don't know. I just, at some point, you guys start coming up with other reasons because it ain't basketball. It's beyond basketball in terms of the logic of that whole dynamic, man. It's a lot of stuff going on under the surface, and the Grizzlies they got to focus on one game at a time. But you hope that this offseason can be pivotal for them checking out some of that stuff.
And I've noticed this, and it's not saying there's anything to it. It might be a coincidence, but when they do the walk-off interviews, every time Luke does a walk-off interview, they don't surround him like they do everybody else. Ja did come over there one time and do the parade inside my city, but anybody else, when they do that walk-out interview, they're like, the whole team's over there. You got three or four guys over there. For some reason with Luke, they don't do that. I guess maybe he's just a new guy and they aren't as close to him yet, but I have noticed that. I thought it was weird. It was just something that caught my attention. It might not be anything. It might just be a coincidence. He's the new guy and they're just not – hasn't gotten that comfortable with him or anything, but I did notice that. Like, I think he's done it like three times and it was kind of the same thing every time. So,
yep. All right. It could be something. It could be that he's a prick in the locker room. I mean, there's, you know, like
that's what I'm saying.
It
goes
two ways. Yeah. It could be absolutely nothing. And it's just, they haven't had that time to build the chemistry there. Or it could be the opposite. And he's just not a good guy to have in the locker room. The skill set that he has and the way that Clippers team is built, there's zero reason for him not to be getting played.
No, on that team makes perfect sense for the way that they play. Like, why would he be playing? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
So, I don't know. I'm not going to dig too far into that. We're just going to say that they haven't had time and go with that. But again, game six tomorrow night, Los Angeles. Hopefully the Grizzlies can get it to game seven. We appreciate you guys tuning in. We will be back with a post game. I mean, maybe, well, probably not tomorrow night, honestly, because it's a 9:30 tip. The two California teams get the early tip.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
And the one team by the Mississippi is going to have to wait till 10 o'clock to watch their team start playing.
And try to get Lakers extra rest, man. Every minute they can give them, that's what they're doing.
Anyway, so you can get the show on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I'm at NBA DWill21.
Yep, Grizz got to fight for their life, man. Fight for their life. They put together a strong game. They definitely got the talent to do it. So looking forward to seeing that. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at CandaceH901. Isaac, take us home.
Yeah, man, I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good about it. Like I said, man, they are overdue for a road win and regressing to the mean there and backs against the wall. This team is shown resiliency over the years and big spot, keep the season on the line. And as Dez the next said, man, bring it back to the M. 191 Bill on Sunday. Hope we'll be talking about a game seven. But you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA. That's ISAAC_NBA. You can get the show at Ethos Grizzlies. Go over there and give us a like and a follow. Get ready. Big night in the 901 tomorrow night. Big game. Hopefully Grizzlies come out with a victory. And we'll got you covered, man. Make sure you tune in for the next edition of the Ethos Grizzlies podcast. And until next time, we're gone.